Hello and welcome back to Even More News, the first news podcast on the Only News Network. Still testing that one out. My name's Katie Stoll.
Hey. No argument from me. Hey. Hi, Katie. It's
Hi.
Cody Johnston is the Good name of me.
To see you, Cody Johnston. Hello. No guest with us today except producer Jonathan, who is always by our
Perpetual
side.
Perpetual guest.
I wormed my way in. Not going away.
He sure did. And we love it. And here's something else worming its way in. A call to action for you to rate, review, and leave a comment if you like our show.
The podcast?
The podcast.
I rate it 9 newses.
Did you say 9 newses or 9 newses?
Newses! No.
Newses.
Oh, my goodness.
Boy, this is off to a great start. We've got some holidays. Should we celebrate
good?
Real quick? No, they're bad. These are the kinds of holidays that make me deeply question why I started doing this to begin with. Some weeks, I think the holidays offer a nice jumping off point and you can get some interesting conversation. Sometimes the holidays are worthwhile. And sometimes you have a day like this one, October 7th, National Frappe Day. National fucking Frappe Day. They don't even call them frappes anymore. Who's updating the calendar?
Have I been saying it wrong? I've been saying frap. Is that
frap?
Do I need to be
fancier?
I
thought it was frappe. I don't think this word exists anymore, to be honest. I don't
Are
think
we
that
done?
That's a
We're
product.
Done with them? What do we call
what
them
even
now?
Is Jonathan,
I mean,
what's a frappe? Frap.
Like a ice blended mocha frappe. That became a frappuccino when Starbucks made it. But I believe it is frappe. And clearly Starbucks has not updated this thing and does not have their hands in it because they would have changed it. They would have wanted it to be National Frappuccino Day. So yes, it's an independent holiday, so it's good.
Yeah, Starbucks does not have their little mitts in our precious National Frappe Day.
Yeah, keep your stir strix to yourself, Starbucks. It's also American Touch Tag Day. Go out there and...
Wait.
Honestly, don't do this. Don't do this. Don't play touch tag right now.
Or, I mean, that's fine. It's an outdoor activity.
Actually, it's an outdoor... You're right. It's fine.
Get vaxxed. Go out and play touch tag.
I think dodgeball sounds better. You're still
Don't
keeping
just
your distance.
Call it tag.
I was also going
There's
to
also
ask
that. Yeah, what is touch tag? Both of these need to be updated.
Yeah, I mean,
it's pretty archaic.
If you just say tag day, I think I would know what you meant. But I guess touch tag distinguishes it from a paper tag on a piece of clothing. And it's American Touch Tag Day.
Yeah, it could be.
It could have been American Play Tag Day.
Play the game of tag. The game of
Shouldn't
tag
that be
day.
In the summer?
Tag, colon, the game, colon, the day.
Life is like a game of tag. Mm.
Lincoln.
Lincoln did say that. Mm-hmm. This has been fun. Should we talk about some news? I've got some news. I went to see Alanis Morissette
How was
this
that?
Week. I didn't want to. It was fine. I don't know.
You didn't want to?
So I did. I wanted to go when I bought the tickets 2 years ago. And in theory, I still wanted to go. But I'm now 2 years older. Mm. Right? And 2 years older on a Tuesday night and tired. And the reality of driving to the Hollywood Bowl was very daunting. And it was hard. And then I got there and it was fun. I'm glad that I went. I'm glad that I spent time with people. But I definitely felt myself wanting to go. And I was holding out because I thought like, oh, she's going to play Aronic soon. And that's kind of the only one I'm left wanting to play. But then she was playing a bunch of stuff in the new album. I'm like, never mind. If I leave now, I can be home by the time all of this traffic nonsense happens. So I leave. I say my goodbyes. The second I pass the no reentry sign, she starts playing Ironic.
Well, yeah.
And it really was ironic. And That's a lot of, I tweeted this and a lot of people were like, oh, you should have stayed. You know what? No. I got to listen to it as I walked out. I got to have a really big laugh about it because, you know, I got to tweet about it. And now I get to sit here and share this story with you. And it's worth it. It's worth it.
How do you know, like, how much of the concert was left after that? Or is that because
maybe like an hour?
So you
40 minutes. Oh, I left at 10.
You
I left a little
done.
Bit before 10. She'd been playing for an hour. There was already garbage and we missed Cat Power. But I was there for hours. So Don't you shame me for leaving I left.
No shame.
I got to hear her sing a whole bunch of songs, and she was wonderful. But if I'm going to be honest, everybody around me was singing louder than her. Mm. Also something fun. Wonderful. Okay, I'm an old lady.
You can do that.
Should we
at
talk
home
about
too.
Actual news? I could do it at home. I kept thinking that. what's happened to me this year?
It's happening to everybody. Don't worry.
Did you hear?
Also, I'm going to a wedding this weekend, and I just was tired. Did I hear what?
Know? And hand in my
did.
Pocket, and you live, you learn.
Yep.
And all.
Yep.
Thank you.
Come on. There we go.
I did not hear. Actually, I did hear. Thank you. You know what?
Yeah.
I got a lot of the big hits.
All
in,
I really
and
want. Yeah.
It's this was like everything. I was just weighing all of it, and I'm glad that I did what I did. Okay. Okay. Break some news for us, Jonathan.
The debt ceiling. Yeah, just this morning, we're recording this Thursday morning, Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer reached a deal on a short-term extension to the debt ceiling. A vote is expected later today to like lock it in place, but it's expected to pass. It's basically the Republicans getting out of the way and not standing in the way of a short-term extension that's going to go toward December 3rd. How do you feel about that?
I think good for them for raising the debt ceiling kind of temporarily, which is something that happens all the time. It's just a thing that we do, and every single time we argue about it, and Republicans say we shouldn't, but ultimately money is fake, and
yeah,
we are going to, maybe we'll get to this, but print a $1 trillion coin, and if we can do that, then maybe it ultimately doesn't matter at all. And we should just
yeah, we'll get
it
to
we
that.
To. It's frustrating you, when they yes.
I was gonna say before we started recording, we joked about this a little bit. It's just interesting that all of a sudden there was movement of some sort after a few days ago. President Biden floated the idea that we might have to change the filibuster, and
yeah.
So that happened. Then this happened. Interesting.
He said that
just
in passing.
The idea.
Yeah, I was wondering if
in passing publicly, which is never passing. But
yeah, that's something that they don't want to happen, McConnell and the crew. And maybe it's like one of those things where like finally, if you say something that they don't want that you're going to do, they'll stop doing the thing where they don't let you do anything. It's like actually like threatening them with consequences, which doesn't happen often. So maybe that did have an effect. Maybe they just realized that, like, they got to do it.
Well, they do got to do it.
Do you think anyone comes off looking like a winner here? Because there was this game of chicken going
on. Oh, no, we're all losers.
No, no one looks like a winner. Everybody looks like a clown.
I mean, if anything, like, winner's not even the right word. It's, like, too strong a word. Scraped buyer, they kind of did it.
I don't think they're playing, like, a good strategic game of chess here.
But also, like, it's going to come, like, it's going to be an issue again in a couple of months. So.
So let's talk about this $1 trillion coin.
This is something that an idea that's been kind of floating around. A former director of the U.S. Mint said, look, if we're getting up against the debt ceiling and we're going to default, the U.S. Mint can just create a $1 trillion coin. We already have a platinum eagle coin that it would be. We changed the plastic mold. We put a new denomination on it. We take a helicopter to the New York Fed and drop it off.
So this makes my brain want to explode. And I know that now, if depending on the vote today, we probably won't get this $1 trillion coin. But the fact that it's this easy to do, that we can just make, this doesn't fuck us. This doesn't fuck the economy. We can just decide that there's more money.
What the experts have said, and you guys know me, not an economist, but they say it won't cause inflation because it's just there to pay for spending that's already authorized by Congress. It's not creating more spending, so it's not like doing a what's the word? Stimulus. It's not like doing a stimulus where you're putting a bunch of money into people's hands for creation in the economy. It's just like depositing it somewhere, and it's not paying down debt. So that.
Yeah, but if you deposit it somewhere, someone could go be like, I'm going to withdraw 20 of these bucks that have been
and
deposited.
And like, if Nicolas Cage should steal it, what's he even going to do with it?
Yeah, I can't use that soda machine.
So they're making money that has no intention of being spent.
Well, it was already not spent,
allocated,
but like.
Right.
Yeah.
But you allocate money, that money to be used. I'm sorry, this is.
Well, no, Katie, money's fake.
Right. Okay. I don't have something.
I don't understand that much either. I think it's silly. If this is what we got to do, print the fucking stupid coin. Put Donald Trump on it. Who cares?
Well, that's the next question. I wanted to pick your brains of whose face would be perfect to put on the coin. And it reminded me of the Simpsons episode where Mr. Burns has a $1 trillion bill and it's Harry Truman giving a thumbs up to it. But I think we can do a little better than we can update that.
Yeah, I think we can update this joke for sure.
I still think Donald Trump should be on the coin. I think it's the most appropriate person for a $1 trillion coin, a thing that's silly and fake, and it's a large amount of money, which he would love, and it should be the smile it should be basically an image of his burger photo when he had the team and he's smiling. He's got like all the burgers from McDonald's on the table in the White House. That already is a beautiful moment of living art. It is perfectly representing the era and the nation in just a glorious, beautiful way. And I think if we put it on a $1 trillion coin, it will be even more art.
I think Trump has a food face because that weird grin he gives in that McDonald's photo is the same grin he has with the Taco Bowl photo, I think. Yeah, he's
Taco
got
Bowl
this weird
face,
food
exactly,
face.
Yeah.
He's like, look what I got.
It's interesting because it's not a food face, it's a prop face, because it's the same smile he will have when he does like photo ops in the Oval Office, or did. You look at like pictures of him with like Kid Rock, and you know, it's always the photo of him at the desk and then two people there. It's the exact same smile every single one. Back in the day when I had time and wanted to do silly jokes, I was gonna take every single photo of that and have like the background change. You know the song One is the Loneliest Number. It was gonna be to the tune of that, and basically his face would be the same the entire time, and then all the people around him would go, because it's a very sad smile when you really look
I think
at
it's
it.
The smile I look at that smile and I think it's the smile of someone who's deeply insecure and practices their smile in the mirror before going out. Like, and it doesn't quite reach their eyes or their soul. It's just, it's been practiced.
He knows he's supposed to smile.
He knows he's supposed to
for
smile.
For the people or for the sandwich or taco bowl. which again, that's why I think that we should make sure a version of that smile is on this
I've got a
fucking coin.
Pitch for who goes on the coin. The great compromiser, the great equalizer, Joe Manchin.
Gross, but excellent transition.
I don't actually believe that. I just wanted a transition.
Jonathan's excellent. Getting so
I
good
prep all
at
week
this.
My broken news transition.
We love a good transition here at the first news podcast.
Joe Manchin, that there are these negotiations on the big bill. I just call it the big bill now. It's Build Back Better, but the big bill, they're still ongoing. He says Democrats need to choose one of their three major priorities. Those priorities in that bill are expanded child tax credit, paid family medical leave, subsidies for childcare. There's other stuff in there, but he says out of those three, they got to pick one.
Another thing that makes my head want to explain.
Arbitrary.
He doesn't care what. He's just like, any of it. You can't have it all, folks, but we can. We fucking can.
Yeah,
we can just make up a $1 trillion coin. But we
it's very transparent and silly. He only ever only wants to pick a smaller number. He has suggested bringing the corporate tax rate up a little bit to lower than he has asked before because the disparity was different. He only wants to say something slightly lower than what is proposed. If this was you got seven major priorities, pick three. He would absolutely say that.
He did.
No, well, he said, I'm saying he like,
yeah.
If there were seven to choose
I
say
see.
Pick three.
Right.
He said pick one of three. He'd say pick three of seven. He'd say pick six of nine or whatever. Like,
so, but yeah, if he just wants to keep no matter what it was, he would do this. But now, so the, his goal is to get the $3.5 trillion plan down to 1.5, down from already where six. I can't even remember what the original number was, but it was six.
Yeah.
And like whatever he talks about it, or a lot of the media talks about it also, they frame this spending as if it's some just astronomical figure instead of something that's been spread out over the course of 10 years and is 100% feasible. But I do appreciate Bernie's response, came out and said, is protecting working families and cutting childhood poverty and entitlement. Perhaps most importantly, does Senator Manchin not believe what the scientists are telling us, that we face an existential threat regarding climate change? No, I think Manchin believes it, but he also gets a lot of money from the oil industry.
Yeah, he doesn't care. Like, yeah, it's frustrating.
He doesn't care.
I like that, you know, these challenges are sort of being met and publicly pushing back on it. But it would be nice if there was a little more specifics of like, yeah, it's money. It's because of money. It's mm-hmm. because of his relationships that he's doing this. I know, like, it's tongue in cheek. He's saying, like, does he not believe what the science is telling? It's like, Bernie knows that he knows and so on. So he's like alluding to the real situation. But I think we need people to say out loud what's really going on. It's harder for like a lot of people too, especially like those in Congress who have similar relationships, maybe not as extreme and maybe not with the same kind of people. But Congress is money and money is Congress. And we're in hell and we're all going to die.
Yeah. The one last thing I wanted to say here was that, I mean, it's something we've said before and, you know, Bernie said it. Lots of people have said it. But the fact of the matter is almost everybody's on board with this except for him and Sinema. And they are standing in the way of what the vast majority want. And that, to me, is unconscionable.
Yeah, I mean, on every single issue, all these ideas pull really well. It's frustrating to see these two people have this kind of control over what is done and stop progress from being made, even though their constituents want it to happen.
Fun. Should we move on?
No, let's talk about this more.
Okay, I think that's enough broken news. And guess what? We don't have an ad this week. So this week, once again, our show is brought to you by Patreon.
Patreon.
We love our Patreon.
.com. It's true, we do. Thanks for your support and love and listening ears. And we will get back to you on the news after I finish this sentence about Patreon. But this is very, very seriously. Thank you so much. We're doing a lot more on Patreon that's exciting to see and hear. So get out there and grab life by
the subscribe button.
Subscribe button. Ooh. And click the like button of your soul with the rating and review of happiness.
And we are back as promised for even more news. Dang. Let's get into talking about earlier this week, we all got to relish in the joy of Facebook being down and bitch about the fact that Congress has allowed Facebook to acquire so many platforms that an outage like this has a lot of very far-reaching implication, especially for areas of the world that rely on services like WhatsApp for basic communication. Yes, the timing of the outage did seem strange. What with the whistleblower coming out? Her name is Frances Haugen. She is a 37-year-old data scientist who worked at Google and Pinterest before joining Facebook in 2019. She was assigned to the Civic Integrity Department, which got dissolved after the 2020 election. I guess they dissolved that because we solved it. We solved the civic integrity problem. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is the only reason I could think why we dissolved that.
Yeah.
Anyway, at that point, she said she didn't think Facebook was willing to do what it needed in order to squelch misinformation and prevent division. The first thing she did was leak a bunch of documents to the Wall Street Journal, which became their Facebook file series. And then she appeared on 60 Minutes on Sunday. And then Monday, of course, was the big Facebook outage. And then she testified to the Senate Commerce Subcommittee on Consumer Protection on Tuesday. And she said a lot of things, a lot of things that makes sense that I guess we all could be pointing to. But this is the first time somebody is coming forward and saying this is what's happening. You know, and some of the main takeaways here, we'll get into the nitty gritty. But, you know, Facebook prioritizes profits over people. No kidding. Using an algorithm that features angry, often hate filled content that generates the most engagement, meaning they know that this is misinformation. They know that it's destructive and bad. But that is the reason why they keep pushing it, because it creates the most engagement on their platform. Yes, you could change the algorithm. No, they don't want to. Other things she talked about is how Instagram is bad for people, but especially teenage girls. Again, something we all could look at anecdotally and see, but what she talked about is pretty intensely disturbing. How the algorithm manipulates and pushes people into other corners that are more and more extreme, and especially in this situation with eating disorders, you know, someone might click on healthy recipes and then that starts to funnel them towards this page and that page, and pretty soon you are on pro-anorexia type accounts, which are incredibly destructive, you know, and it's also a factor in raising suicide attempts and suicidal thoughts.
Yeah, they did this, Blumenthal and Finsta guy. They did this, they created a fake Instagram account, Katie, to what you're talking about, where they would like these sort of like health type food accounts, and then it got to accounts with names like I Have to Be Thin and like Eternally Starved and stuff like that. And Instagram, I think, is there. Like, I want to talk a little bit about like their Facebook's response to all of this. We can get into a little later, but like Instagram said that those accounts violated their terms of service and they shouldn't have been allowed on the platform. They were, though. They were on the platform. So like, it's just like a very. So
that's
what?
That's not the response.
They were. They were there. So like, you're doing a bad job in some way. Surely, like.
Also, that's such a cop-out.
Oh, for sure. But, like, even if it was, like, just, like, a legit, like, well, they shouldn't have been allowed on the platform. They were. So you should maybe do better at making sure they're not.
Well, that goes into what they were, because that's on Instagram. And on Facebook, the research that came out was, like, oh, they can only successfully, I have it here somewhere, they could only delete 3-5% or take action against 3-5% of the like hate-filled or violence inciting content, and they know this, so they have like, this is against our terms of service,
right?
Great, but we are largely ineffective against like doing it.
But my response to that, which I know you agree with, is that this issue is also, sure, there's the issue of the content existing on the platform, but we're talking about the algorithm,
yes,
which knows that that's harmful and also knows that that's how you develop an addiction to the platform, to the space. They know how to get you coming back, and they are what this shows is that they are willfully prioritizing that they see the data. They know it. They keep this research hidden. She talks about this, that does not make changes to anything because they know it'll cut into their profits. And there are lots of things you can do. We're going to talk about the misinformation, but while we're on this eating disorder, the impact on our youth, I do want to talk about this a little bit more because it's so fucking important. Mm-hmm. It's really easy to say some of this and be like, oh yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I think it's different in, let's say, like regulation of cigarettes, where, you know, people say like, look at these specific physical health effects that you can have. Well, this has specific health effects as well. It's just mental health.
Yeah, it's less tangible.
Our society, of course, we talk all the time about the pressures our society places on image and, you know, being thin or looking a certain way and consumerism and how that affects people. But you add in these algorithms and these forces feeding even more and of this content into young people, and it greatly affects how they are developing and how they navigate the world, obviously.
It's just upsetting how much they know that they do and don't really do anything about it.
There's literally stuff that she's talked about is developing programs. And one of these, I suppose, the Instagram Kids has now been tabled, but specifically interested in targeting children and getting them hooked young, a part of this. And then part of that will bring in more adult users as well. It's very calculated, and it does not matter if there are all sorts of long-term destructive mental health side effects, because that to them is not their responsibility.
Yeah, and this is true of, it's true of everything, so many things. Even like the games on Facebook and a lot of like games in general, like they are designed to get you addicted, to keep you coming back. It doesn't matter. The whole plan is we'll get people addicted and then they're hooked and they come back regardless of the effects.
Create products, optimize them for maximum goodness for the company that created them before we understand any of the effects that they're having. That's just our system. So now we've got, it's way too late to kind of take back Instagram and not have 13-year-olds on it. The whistleblower, she said, like, if it was up to her, that Congress should raise like the minimum age of even using them from 13 to 17. But this is kind of the issue with, like, the way Blumenthal phrased his whole "will you end Finsta" is funny, since it's not a specific product. But like, what he's asking is, I created an account as if I'm a 13-year-old girl, like getting all this pro anorexia stuff. Can you make that not happen? And Facebook is just like, no,
right. Yeah,
we
exactly.
Can't. Like, we could raise the age and say you got to be 17, but like, people just, there's no way to stop it.
Again, it's the goddamn algorithm. There is a way to stop it, to make it less of a problem, to stop feeding people into it.
Once you get to that level of, like, Jonathan, like you were saying, where it's like, well, it exists and it's been very profitable, and if we change it, then it's less profitable. I keep thinking about that. We talked about this a little bit last week, the Marco Rubio bill.
The woke
corporation bill that's, gives like shareholders and people more like control over like whether or not, if a business is making a decision, if it's like for woke reasons, then they can do something about it if it gets in the way of profit. If a decision is made not in the best fiduciary interest, I'm not saying that will become a law because it's a terrible law and no one actually supports it. But stuff like that, where it's like, you could just say that caring about like the mental health of young girls is like wokeness. And because right. If you do anything about this, the profit will go down. There will be less profit for this company. So the decision that they're making is a public health decision, not a profit-based decision. We've gotten to the point where things like public health, as we've seen over the past 2 years, is a woke issue now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's just, again, it's not going to be a law. It's just, these are all like weirdly connected in frustrating ways.
So I want to pivot slightly to talk about something else that she discussed, and that is specifically Facebook and the news feed, and other ways that they know that they can cut down on misinformation being shared online and choose not to. We can look to what's happened pretty successfully on Twitter, which is the addition of, are you sure you want to retweet this without reading the article? There are features you can build in that's just, it reminds people to read through, to actually look at the contents of something before sharing, and it greatly cuts down on the sharing of stuff that is false and not true. And Facebook absolutely has that at their disposal and chooses not to do it, again, because of profits.
It's another frustrating conversation that will have be impossible to really have, because there are various ecosystems of information that in which we now live. And, I'm sympathetic to the idea of, like, obviously, like, having a like a government entity control what can and can't be posted online is not good in the long run. Who is going to be in charge next? Who's the president next? Who's the party in power next? Having the government decide what is acceptable for that is, I don't feel great about it. But like, Katie, like you said, like there are ways to improve just basic like information literacy. Like, mm-hmm. how do you research things? What are like, how do you consume information? How do you spread information? And are you paying attention? Yeah, I don't know. It's a delicate sort of situation to navigate. And the idea that we live in a time when where like Congress could actually do that delicate work and have a nuanced conversation is just impossible. And it's like I talked a little bit about this earlier, too. Her inner statement, she talks about how, you know, this internal research about misinformation and all this sort of mental damage done to people by making them so angry. Political campaigns have said that, like, yeah, we have to post angry shit and then the Facebook's algorithm will push it. Like, they're encouraging this kind of stuff. And but in the statement, she talks about how, like, you know, all this research that exists that they haven't shared with anybody, it could remind you of, like, with the tobacco companies and what ended up happening there. And she listed off all these examples, and it was very striking to see that she didn't mention fossil fuel companies or climate mm-hmm. change, because we didn't do anything about that.
Right.
And that is another case of just, this is, these are the facts. They had the facts. They knew the facts. They hid the facts, and they kept going because of profit. And we are in a time when for so long, one party decided to pretend that they didn't even believe in it. It's just one of those things that it points to me that, like, well, we're not actually going to do anything about this.
Right.
We didn't do anything about that. We're certainly not going to do anything about this, especially with, again, like the Dr. Seuss, the banning, and like yeah. all that kind of
that was going to be
stuff.
The next topic. I was like, do we think anything comes of this? Because for me, no, I don't. I think it's performative. And maybe something, but nothing significant, you know.
Bipartisan group of senators talked a big game, you know, both like Klobuchar and Ted Cruz were like, we need to subpoena internal documents. But like, it is not to, I don't think anyone's, but especially the Republicans' advantage to do something about the Facebook algorithm. The Republicans just brought yeah. Zuckerberg in front of Congress and yelled at him for what they said was censoring conservative mm-hmm. viewpoints. Well, that means that's the civic mm-hmm. integrity team
exactly.
tamping down the algorithm during the election. They were going
right?
to, you know,
exactly.
make a law saying he can't do that. So
exactly.
what side
it's
are
the,
you on?
They're subpoenaing stuff for different reasons. It's going to turn yeah. into a different kind of circus. It's
yep.
very frustrating. It's the it's that Twitter. Sorry, real quick. Just it reminded me of the statement Twitter made about tamping down on like white nationalism and Nazi stuff in America. And they found that if they implemented an algorithm to do that, a lot of prominent Republican accounts would have to be banned. And that's all they would want to talk about. And certainly they wouldn't want to explore like why they are, their accounts would be banned if they're also banning Nazis. But
real quick, I just want to throw this out there. Everyone's so concerned with their bottom line and making money, but who's to say that long term implementing significant changes doesn't benefit the platform? You know, you show the public that you are serious and that you care, and then people use it again. Like mm-hmm. how much of us have been turned off by Facebook and choose not to go on there because it's a cesspool.
Yeah.
You know, I open Instagram and shut it really quickly because I don't like all the stuff that's being pushed down my face. So actually, long-term business strategy might be in your best interest. Anyway, Cody wants to talk a little bit about Facebook's response, which I agree is important.
Yeah, I mean, sort of to that point, one of the responses I thought was interesting. Well, first of all, Zuckerberg started a statement with, I'm sure many of you have found the recent coverage hard to read because it just doesn't reflect the company we know. Zuckerberg, my man.
So funny.
My man.
Maybe he should stop getting his news from Facebook then.
And so there are just a few statements like that I found interesting. One in particular, the argument that we deliberately push content that makes people angry for profit is deeply illogical. First of all, if it shows that you're doing that, then it's, even if it's illogical, it's true that it's happening. So your logic doesn't have to make sense if the fact is that that's what's going on. But he says, we make money from ads, and advertisers consistently tell us they don't want their ads next to harmful or angry content. First of all, even if your ads aren't next to harmful and angry content is what brings people there to the site and stay there. And then they'll see ads at other places. But also, if they're consistently, right. if they're consistently telling you that, then maybe it's still a problem.
I'm sorry. His whole statement was very gaslighty of, I can't believe this is coming out of left field. Why would you say
I
this?
I would and never.
Like, clearly, we're not doing the thing that we're clearly doing.
Yeah, it's also like, it's just interesting. It's not even interesting. It just sucks that here we are talking about the damage these apps do to young girls and their images of themselves.
I'll just say young people.
Young people and their images of themselves. Thank you. And this all stemmed from a website that rated
yeah,
the appearances of classmates.
Or what was it called? Was it Hot or Not? Or was it?
Yeah,
it was Hot or Not.
It like it's just so perfect's the wrong word because it sucks. But that's where it started, and that's
it's
where
poetic.
It still is. It's still where it is. Yes, to borrow a phrase from George Lucas, it's poetry. It rhymes.
Do it in the George Lucas voice.
It's poetry. It rhymes.
There you go. Let's move on with our remaining minutes to discuss something a little bit more fun.
Something very real.
Very real.
It's very dangerous that we
Havana syndrome. Yeah. We have debated talking about this off and on for a while. And then this week there was some sort of news report about how we're urging U.S. officials and diplomats to, you know, report any cases of Havana syndrome and to leave your areas or what have you. I don't know. So we figured this would be a good time to talk about Havana syndrome.
Well, yeah, because there's a it's not just that report. Like, and if you've been online, like, you've noticed it.
I'm saying this is a reason why we're talking about it in the news this week.
I'm just explaining that like this is a very clear push to make this a thing again. There are smatterings of it over the years. It started in 2016, but over the past like 2 or 3 weeks. There are more and more articles about this, and it's very clearly bullshit propaganda that it's very, very interesting that like, why are they doing this for these 3 weeks?
Just in case people want to know, aren't aware of what Havana syndrome is or are confused.
It's fake.
It is this mysterious syndrome where people develop symptoms like headaches, nausea, fatigue. There's like pulsing, buzzing. It's been vague. It's been vague descriptions of what people are experiencing when they
develop these
symptoms. But it has been plaguing U.S. diplomats overseas. This goes back to 2016. I guess. But yes, this week, the Pentagon told national security officials they should promptly leave their locations if they experience these health incidents. But there's absolutely no evidence that there is some sort of ultrasonic weapon, because that's the theory, that there is some sort of mysterious weapon that's being used to create
Cuban space lasers is what they're suggesting, ultimately.
Human space lasers, which I love. We were talking about this in a meeting recently. Cuba, like a socialist mess, or are these masterminds that can develop brain lasers? Mm-hmm. You know, like
in a lung
what
cancer
is
vaccine.
It?
Yeah, it's very silly. It could be any number of things. There's like, you know, a mass psychosis sort of theory. It could be hangover. Stress, like again, like the symptoms are headaches, nausea, and fatigue.
Well, and I don't mean to suggest of people making things up in their and or that placebo effect or anything like that isn't real. In that people might, you know, placebo effect isn't the right word, but you can be told that this thing is happening and then develop symptoms. Our brains do things like that. This is part of mental health awareness to be explored. This is about also how we don't, we jump immediately to there's some sort of sci-fi weapon, well, as opposed to let's talk to somebody, a professional, about what the effects of a high pressure situation, how being told that this might happen, you know, paranoia, any number of things, how that can feed into the manifestation of symptoms, you know?
Well, and we didn't jump to this conclusion. The fucking Pentagon did. So,
yeah,
like, it's just there. It's very clearly just sort of like drumming up antagonism towards other, you know, non-allied nations, it seems.
Also, it's interesting how they call it the Havana Syndrome, but it happens all around the world, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
So who's doing it?
Well, I think it was first in Cuba, and then now, now it's like other places. And so it's like,
So does every foreign country have this technology except us?
That's a good question. A lot of good questions come up when talking about Havana Syndrome.
Is there some sort of conspiracy around the world against us?
And I'll tell you a not great question about Havana Syndrome.
Yeah.
Is it real? Because that's an easy question to answer. And the answer is no. And again, like, you know, the symptoms.
And maybe we'll have egg on our face in a few months.
Well, the symptoms are real. But like, just the idea that like they're jumping to like, well, some sort of weapon, surely. A weapon that, as far as I can tell, can't exist with our current technology.
Well, and that's also what the Pentagon has been, because like what skeptics have been calling this is mass psychogenic illness. Most people who study this kind of stuff says this is just like boilerplate mass psychogenic illness. These are psychosomatic symptoms, not that they're not real, not that the people experiencing them aren't suffering. But but what the Pentagon has been doing is if you suggest that, then, you know, it's like, oh, you're calling them fakers. You're saying that they're, and it's like, well, no, I'm not saying people aren't experiencing.
Are you denying their lived experience,
right,
Jonathan?
I don't want to do that.
Well, you are. No, it's super. That is what happens if you sort of question it. And it is very it's a tactic, right? It's just a tactic used to discredit the idea of discrediting their very silly theory that it's a space laser.
But right now that we're like 5 years into it, and there's been a lot of effort and studies put into it, and no study has found any either environmental or physical thing that's consistently happening across even half of these people, let alone all of them.
Okay, but what were the weird noises, John?
Last week, a declassified State Department report came out concluding that the buzzing noises were most likely crickets.
Well, that can cause headaches and nausea and fatigue.
See, I was listening to the crickets the other night, and I was like, do I have Havana syndrome?
That's the thing, is everything can cause nausea and fatigue. That is the symptoms of almost every illness.
Almost every illness. And also, like, again, if you're like in the CIA and working hard in the CIA or whatever, like you're in a foreign country, I don't know, like, yeah, you got a little tired, a little stressed out, maybe. This is very silly. And again, like what you were talking about, like they've tried to find out, they've done experiments and they've done like they've looked in, they've done research on this, and it doesn't seem like it's an electric
thing.
Weapon.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Watch out don't watch out for Havana Syndrome. Watch out for articles saying Havana Syndrome is a weapon.
And if we're completely wrong, I will own it. But this is the information that we have now, and it's overwhelming.
I do think that, real quick, I do think that it gives the media even less credibility on public health, which is something they really need to have credibility on right now, to just write articles with all of the different theories about what it could be, ultrasonic microwaves or whatever, and then nowhere in the article. And there are several articles like this. We got a Wall Street Journal, an NBC News article, and nowhere in it even say, oh, also some people think it's a psychogenic illness.
Everything else is fucking it up.
Yeah, they love it. They love the that conflict, that antagonism, that like, oh, maybe there's a weapon, maybe we gotta do something about it.
Everybody's out for clicks.
Yeah, you can.
That's the theme of this episode. I think that does it for us today.
Yeah,
friends.
I'm getting a little Havana syndrome-y, so
yeah, I'm gonna Havana syndrome out of here. No, that didn't work. quick reminder from up top: rate, review, leave a comment, and do not forget.
Whoa.
That we love you very much.
Bah.